My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A fun time to be an NFL fan and a guy who does what my next guest does for a living. He follows it, he breaks it down, he watches films, he puts his mock drafts out there, and he does a heck of a job of it. He was on with us about a month ago when we had that much more time and still in evaluative mode. Now only 10 days out. What do we think about who's going in the NFL draft? Eric Edholm from Yahoo Sports, their lead draft analyst, joins us here on CBS Sports Radio. How you been, E?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for jumping aboard for a couple minutes tonight.
Sure.
10 days out. Most of the pre-draft visits are done. The combine is now long in our rearview mirror. Those tapes are burning up, but they haven't. Guys haven't been out there on the field playing for months. How can players actually move on draft boards at this time, 10 days out, or can they even move?
Well, yeah, there are a couple exceptions. You know, obviously we're at the phase where, you know, the medical information can still be coming in for players who have injuries and, you know, are in the middle of rehab. Maybe they're able to squeeze in a workout like Drake London, the USC receiver on Friday. And he didn't run a 40, but he did work out, which is important, I think, to see. And, you know, that players come in for visits with teams. You know, we've missed part of that process, you know, during the pandemic. And so, you know, maybe a player comes in and really impresses the team or really turns them off, you know. So it can, you know, individual teams can have different views of players. Players' stocks as a whole largely don't go down or, you know, certainly not up, but down, yeah, if they you know, rob the food king or something. You know, I mean, if they do something illegal or what have you. I mean, that would certainly change things. But, yeah, for the most part, teams' boards have been static for a while now, at least 95, 98% of them or something. Just a little bit of late-arriving information.
All right, couple things off what you said. Drake London did work out, late workout, wanted to wait as long as possible because he's rehabbing from an ankle injury at the end of last year. Did work out, but didn't run. We knew he wasn't going to run at the combine. Most people thought he'd run at his pro day. Chose not to do that either. I saw his quotes. Hey, I don't have to show you how fast I am. You could just check the tape and watch me go by guys. I like his confidence level, but how much do you think it hurts him at all? That there are some overly analytically driven teams that want those data points to look at. The fact that he didn't run, drop him down a little bit?
You know, it could in certain teams' minds, you know, ones that maybe put a little bit more emphasis on those numbers, or if they watched the tape and felt like his speed was merely average or what have you. But, you know, he's a bigger, longer target. Obviously, his production this year, albeit in a shortened season, he only played 8 games and really part of 8 games. And but boy, 11 catches a game. I mean, that speaks for itself on some level. You know, the analytics people also would tell you under True Serum that, you know, he had a pretty young breakout age. You know, he played right away at USC, and, you know, even when it was a more crowded receiver room, he was still getting the ball quite a bit. You know, the other data points, he's still a young guy, certainly favor him, but it's a crowded receiver group this year up top, and there's no clear-cut number one, right? I mean, we have Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave from Ohio State. I think both are going pretty high. had Jameson Williams from Alabama not suffered the ACL injury in the national championship game, maybe he's your clear-cut number one. But the injury certainly adds a layer of intrigue. And then you have, you know, guys like Burks and London and, you know, Jahan Dotson. And it's hard to know how they all shake out. I could make a case for London being the first receiver off the board if, say, the, you know, Atlanta Falcons or New York Jets want to get a little bit more size of that position. You know, you certainly could see that being a possibility. If the Seahawks move on from DK Metcalf, do they suddenly look at receiver? Is that an option for them? You know, that's kind of the range where I think receivers start going off the board. And it's not clear. I think Garrett Wilson has a chance to be the first one, but I think Olave's going high. That means you could see a scenario where Williams and London end up kind of battling out for wide receiver three honors. And, you know, if London's available to play sooner than Williams, does that tip it in his favor? Hard to know. It's probably going to be a club-by-club proposition, but I don't see Drake London falling too far. I really think he's going to safely land inside the top 20, and he may push, you know, for the back end of the top 10 or certainly in the early teens.
Fair enough. One thing that you said drew my interest because I just turned back the clock of my head to 2 years ago when we had basically the COVID draft, which was Roger Goodell from his living room announcing all the picks,
right,
which was very weird but also different and intriguing, at least it was for me. But I know what the NFL had to do just to get that draft up and running because COVID hit right after the combine shut down. No individual workouts, no pre-draft visits. It was kind of the NFL drafting in the dark more than anything. And I know for a fact that a lot of players got together with their agents and hired video crews and put together their own individual workout tapes that they shipped out to teams. Now, this is edited, and you're only going to show, put your best foot forward and show what you could do really well, so you could only put so much emphasis on it. But I know there were guys who actually took that seriously in the league, that if a kid went so hard to do it, it showed you about his desire to be in the league, and damn, you can't fake that if he's jumping 46 vertical inches and the like.
Right.
Does that still ongo? It probably worked for some players, which means it worked for some agents. So some agents might, who have players now, advise, hey, it can't hurt to send a tape out to each and every single team. Does any of that go on? And when the teams get it, do they actually look at the tape or file it under G?
Yeah, it might happen with some lesser rated players or players that, you know, the good thing is that every pro day has at least one scout recording the numbers at it. I mean, they make sure, you know, that every single pro day is covered. Every number is verified there. Almost any player worth draft consideration is going to, you know, if they haven't worked out at the combine, for instance, they're going to end up at some pro day. And even, you know, the Division III kids could try to upgrade to a bigger school nearby or something like that, or their hometown. Obviously now, you know, with visits back open and workouts and whatnot, you know, teams have local days. They have their there are allotted 30 individual visits as well. Plus we have, I don't know, about five or six all-star games as well. So there are ample ways for players to either get tested or to be worked out by teams or to have just eyes on them in the case of the all-star games. But I'm sure it does for some players who maybe kind of way below the radar. An agent signs somebody and says, you got to look at this guy, and I'm going to show you what we have. We've got these workout numbers, or there's an injury or something like that. But again, for most of these players, given that we're back to a normal cycle here and there really isn't that COVID interruption now, I think most of those probably end up in a file drawer somewhere, or maybe the trash, or, you know, at this stage of the operation, most teams have gathered pretty much all the data they can on a high percentage of the players.
Eric at home, NFL draft expert for Yahoo Sports, our guest here on CBS Sports Radio. All right, one last, and I didn't know we were going to go this far down the road, on COVID draft questions. I know we're 2 years removed from the seasons being shortened, and then, of course, as I just mentioned, after the combine, having no individual workouts thereafter, so it was very much a compromised draft. But it has had a domino effect. Because of the missed year, teams gave players an extra year. They could stay an extra year, have an extra year of eligibility, which means everybody's going to get pushed back a little bit. Is this the last year we see that? That maybe the draft is a little bit deeper, 250, 260, however many deep they draft, might have that many more players that can actually get a draftable grade. What kind of a COVID domino effect is there in this year's draft as far as the depth of it?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I think it definitely applies. You did see players take advantage of that extra year of eligibility, especially a lot of the small school guys who, you know, maybe they were forced to play in the spring or maybe they, you know, sat out the year, whatever it may be. Pretty much everybody was given the extra year. And I do think this is maybe the last one. I mean, you'll still see somewhat of a minor effect maybe next year, but with some of the younger players and whatnot. But yeah, I think where you're going to see this draft depth play out, I suspect, not only will there be a handful of day three picks who may be surprised, because I don't view this draft as being very top-heavy at all. I think this would be a great draft to have like 8 or 9 picks, and 5 of them are on day three. You know, really, honestly, I think that would be a real chance to get some sixth-round talents in the seventh, some seventh-round talents in the undrafted ranks. You're going to see the message that I've gotten from some scouting directors that there will be some players who go undrafted that you think, wow, that's surprising. And it happens every year, but the number may be a little bit higher this year. And I know by that phase, most people have tuned out. They, you know, they look at their team's picks and all that, and maybe they scan over the list of undrafted players. But as we know, historically, there are more undrafted players on NFL rosters every single year than there are first-round picks. That's a fact, and that will remain a fact for a long time. If anything, that number is going to go up, because I do think this year's undrafted crop may end up being, you know, it's going to provide 2 or 3 more surprises than we normally get in a typical cycle. Because as you pointed out, the 2020 undrafted ranks, I'd have to go back and look. I'm sure there's a couple who have been pretty good, but, you know, it was one of the thinner crops in recent years for that very reason.
And funny, we're 2 years removed, and I know I don't want to get into a political conversation about, ooh, there's some rising rates in certain parts of the country, and blah, blah, blah. No, we certainly are in a better place than we were 2 years ago when the NFL had to do its draft from Roger Goodell's living room, but there is still a little bit of an effect that's coming through on every single year. One other question about the college football game and how it affects the draft. What effect is the transfer portal had on the draft? Players jumping from school to school, do you think it has any tangible effect, or is that just a college football thing that they're dealing with and teams can improve, teams can find help elsewhere, maybe balances out college football a little? Does it have any effect on the draft?
You know, in some ways it may complicate matters for scouts. In others, it may actually open things up. For instance, let's look on the positive side. On the positive side, you know, let's say a player, you know, spends his first 3 years in school A, you know, West Virginia Tech, whatever, I'm just making it up, and then they transfer to, you know, Alabama State, and the last year you're going to be looked at by a different scout, for instance, the area scout up in the, you know, the Northeast or the Pennsylvania, you know, the kind of Mid-Atlantic area. They're going to have eyes on them for the first part of their career, and then they're going to get viewed by a different area scout. So that's going to give a little bit of a different perspective. Plus, if those two teams run different systems, offense or defense, whatever side of the ball our imaginary prospect is on, you know, you may have a good idea of, okay, he's a better fit in this type of scheme than he is in that type of scheme. On the other hand, it can stunt development. You know, you transfer into a school where you think you're getting a starting job, and then all of a sudden somebody beats you out. Maybe it's a really good player, but still, if you're not starting as a senior or your final year or your, you know, whatever, your last stop on the train, if you will, you know, that may mar your draft stock to the point where, wow, maybe I should have stayed put, or I should have transferred to another school. You know, the grass isn't always greener at the next location. So I'm all for the transfer portal. I think it's added a layer of excitement. It's extended the college season where, you know, obviously for basketball, there's a lot of movement right now. We just had JT Daniels transfer in football to West Virginia. You know, there's still movement at a time when college football typically was dormant. So, you know, from a fan perspective, I think it's great. The student athletes have more options. Does it get overused? Perhaps, but still, you know, it's the kind of flexibility from a sporting perspective that we love. From the draft, though, it can make some matters, I think, a little bit more muddled. And I think in some ways it may, you know, kind of open some eyes on players and give you a perspective that we wouldn't normally have had before, or not as easily had, because there were transfers before, but it wasn't this freeway of movement that we have now, and it's a lot easier, obviously. So the answer is, I think it could help, and it could also hurt, depending on the situation.
Understood. Our buddy Eric Edelm from Yahoo Sports, draft analyst, our guest here on CBS Sports Radio. All right, I want to ask about two individual players who, depending on whose belief, how they look at players coming into a draft, we've gotten a lot of debate on them. Two guys who I think are just stone-cold freak talents, but they both have a question mark attached to them. The first is Kyle Hamilton. I think he's still the unquestioned best safety in the draft. It's not even close as far as I'm concerned. I think there's a chance he might be the best football player in the draft. 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we look back, well, who's there? Oh, Kyle Hamilton was. But he had a not great bunch of efforts at the combine, didn't test well. And then in his individual workout day, he once again ran significantly slowly, and you're supposed to be able to run faster at your pro day than you are at the combine. That wasn't the case with Kyle Hamilton. To me, he just looked like one of those guys who may run slow but play fast. Not like a guy who can run slow and play fast over a guy who runs fast and plays slow every day of the week.
Sure.
Some people have him going in the top five. Others have him dropping down into the 20s. I saw one mock draft had him going to the Patriots at 21. That's a massive swing. What is your rating of Kyle Hamilton?
Yeah, boy, if they let him get to New England, I would be shit. I think the Patriots would run that card up, and I think that would apply to a number of teams in the five or six picks before that. I mean, I understand why some people, there's a positional value, right? You rank quarterback at the top. There, you know, maybe it's receiver, edge rusher, tackle, you know, a handful more that are on that next tier, and so on and so forth. And I feel like we treat safeties like we treat tight ends, right? They better be darn special. At least that seems to be what the view of the position is, in order for me to consider drafting them high, right? And you know, I wouldn't say Isaiah Simmons has been a bust so far. I mean, he's been a little bit more of a linebacker than a safety, and he's sort of come in, flashed a little bit of his ability. But, you know, has he played like the number eight pick in the draft yet? You know, debatable. You know, obviously Jamal Adams went number six, I believe. And, you know, even though he was traded for a Kings ransom, I think you'd be hard-pressed to say that, you know, he's matched his draft slot. And so a lot of that has to do with the position, unless they're an Ed Reed type of quality, you know, it's hard to justify. But so that's part of it. And you're right, the workout, the 4.7 40 at his pro day was disappointing. Like you, I watch the tape and I see a guy who can cover a lot of ground in a hurry. His instincts kind of give him a head start, if you will. You know, he's able to break on the ball while before some players even realize what's going on in the same position. So I think he's rare. I think he's special. I'm not worried about the speed because he does have that field fast quality. But, you know, if you told me he ended up going 12th to the Vikings or something like that, or a pick or two after that, I wouldn't be completely stunned. We saw Derwin James, you know, and he had injury questions, but, you know, he fell to, what, 17th, I want to say? To me, that was a highway robbery, even for a guy that, you know, has battled some ailments along the way. You know, you take special players when you get the opportunity to take them. So if Kyle Hamilton's still there in the late teens, I think I would personally be a little bit surprised.
The other guy I want to ask you about is Thibodeau. Before the year started, people had him as 1-1, that he was the top prospect in all of football. Had some injury issues his senior year his draft-eligible year at Oregon, but has once again, if you look at the tape from last year, you see how special he is, and he's got more burst than anybody as far as pass rushers go, and they've got some really good pass rushers in this draft. He's talking a little trash, saying that if I'm not the first pick in the NFL draft, then somebody should be fired, and that's a joke. I don't have an issue with it. That's just confidence, borderline cocky, and he hasn't proven that he can't do it in the NFL yet. So if he believes he's going to do it, let him go out and do it. I would use a really high draft pick on him to do so, like maybe 1A. What's the feeling about him around the NFL? Are there teams that are worried about his not playing much as last year, that he is a little bit of a cocky guy, didn't do what they wanted to do in interview meetings and or at the combine? Is he going to pay a price? Because I think he is easily the most talented edge rusher in this draft.
Yeah, he's a fascinating player. I mean, he really has all the ability in the world. Like you said, the confidence to back it up, too. I mean, you know, lacks a little bit of fluidity and you know, his impact. I mean, you could watch him and maybe the first quarter he has a sack and a tackle for loss and a tip ball, and then you may not hear his name again till the fourth quarter. I mean, he does have some, you know, hot and cold patches where you forget he's out there at times, and then other patches where he's the most dominant player on the field. So there's a little bit of a hot and cold quality to him. But back to the personality stuff that you kind of brought up, I think, you know, and sometimes NFL teams overthink this stuff. I mean, I've heard people give, you know, dissertations about players' character, and I get it. I know why that they spend so much time figuring out who the person is as much as they do figuring out who the player is, because, you know, that's where probably your most misses are. But I also think there is a fill point where you can just get past the point of sort of psychoanalyzing every guy. But it's hard not to when you have a player who I was at the combine and he did his media session, and Thibodeau said something to the effect of, you know, look, I'm a tape junkie. I'm paraphrasing here, but you know, I watch a lot of my tape. No coach can tell me something about myself that I don't already know. And you know, you understood what he was saying. He was saying, look, I put in the work. No one can question my work ethic. I do it. But what he also seemed to be saying is that I know my own game. You know, some coach tells me that you're not good at X, Y, or Z. You know, it's hard for a team not to take that in a way. But within an hour of him saying that to the media, there aren't scouts out there. Believe me, it got back to him pretty fast. I already had a guy that I had asked about Thibodeau kind of saying, were you there when he said this? And I said, yeah. He said, was that how it went? And I said, yeah, that's how it went. And I think there are certain teams in the top 10 that just decide he may be a good football player, but he's not for us. I do think he's in play for Detroit at number 2, though. They've spent a lot of time working on him. They've gone out there. They were at his pro day. They did a private workout with him. And they're looking at him. And if Aiden Hutchinson goes 1, Kayvon Thibodeau, I think, is one of the 2 or 3 players most likely to go 2. But if they pass on him, I don't know. I don't know about Houston at 3. I don't know about the Jets at 4. I don't know about the Giants at 5. Those are 3 teams I could see passing on him. And, you know, the Giants and Jets pick again shortly after that. Would they consider him on the way back? I don't know. It's a really interesting question. He could go 2. He could slip a little. I don't think he's going 6 because Carolina may not need another edge rusher. So, again, it's more of a numbers game, I think. There are certain teams that, like Detroit, may say, we really like him, but this other player we're just going to feel a little safer about. And then how far does he go? Does he get to Seattle at 9? Does Atlanta jump on him at 8? You know, all those options are on the table. I wrote at the combine, I didn't know that he was a slam dunk top 5 pick, and I think that holds up. But Detroit, my opinion is the Lions could be the team that prevent that free fall. If they pass on him, hard to know where he goes.
2 or potential drop. I see where you're coming from. All right, 2 more quickies.
Yeah.
Number 1, Kenny Pickett's not going to be at the draft. They invited 21 players, 2 quarterbacks are showing, not Kenny Pickett as one of them. Have you heard anything? Do you read anything into that?
No, because we've had top picks not show up at the draft before. I, you know, from what I understand, he's going to be at home in New Jersey. He's going to be with his fiance and his family. Now, separate from that, completely independent of that, if you start thinking about Kenny Pickett, where he could land, all of a sudden if you assume Carolina is going to go offensive tackle, let's say they're not enamored with any of these guys, and let's say no quarterback has gone prior to that point. I know there's talk about Malik Willis at 2, but again, just under this assumption that we get past the 6th pick, both, you know, every quarterback is still on the board, and then at some point Malik Willis goes off in the next 5, 6, 8 picks, whatever it may be. I don't know what the number is, but boy, you know, you start looking for a place where Pickett naturally fits, and a team that isn't feeling pretty, you know, isn't worried about their quarterback situation. There, you know, there's a lot of them that already have their starter in place, and they may feel like this is a luxury pick and this and that. I don't know. I don't know where he fits. That's a fascinating one. You might start seeing teams come up from the bottom, you know, from round two into round one. You want that fifth-year option. It's great. Great to have for a quarterback. But, you know, it's hard to find his natural landing spot now. But, yeah, this really is going to be one of the more interesting storylines. I don't think the invitation, you know, I think he was invited to the draft. I think he said, no, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm going to stay at home. So we've seen it before. The interesting one is Matt Corral. I didn't assume Matt Corral was going to be there. Maybe Desmond Ridder turned it down. I don't have intel on that. Maybe he's quarterback three. You never know. You know, Seattle's been a team that's done a lot of work on Corral. So there's some interesting possibilities for him going in round one. Could we have four QBs? Maybe. There is intrigue in this draft. I know people have struggled to find it, but I think it's there. And this is one of the big storylines.
I actually like Corral and would not be surprised if he goes in the first round. All right, so that's one guy I like. Last question is the guy that you like. As you're checking out other mock drafts and you've got a guy that you think everyone, NFL teams maybe, from your sources, other mock drafters are underrating, the guy you're waiting a year or two to go. See, I told you guys, everyone had him mocked in the fourth round. I told you he was a second-round picker. I saw him as a first-round talent. How he ever got to day two, I don't know. Who's that guy for you?
Good question. One who's going to be fascinating to see where he ends up going. I know it's not a sexy position necessarily. Last year was with Kyle Pitts, but Jelani Woods, a tight end out of Virginia. Now, I don't know that a lot of people knew his name, certainly not prior to last season. He was at Oklahoma State. He was a blocker. They were, you know, running the ball with 12 personnel a lot. He was kind of their sixth offensive lineman in a lot of cases. And all of a sudden, he transfers to Virginia. Shows off his great athleticism. He's a legit 6'7", 255 pounds. He goes to the combine, runs a 4.6. Great jumping drills, like really outstanding workout. You know, I had watched him throughout the fall and thought, wow, why isn't there more buzz on this guy? I'm shocked, right? He's never going to be a true deep threat, but he can run. And, you know, he's good. So figuring out who tight end one is this year is going to be really interesting. Is it Trey McBride? Is it Greg Dulcich? Is it Woods? Is it somebody else? I don't really know where he's going to go because his workouts were phenomenal. How high do you take a guy who profiles like, you know, Mercedes Lewis, early career Mercedes? He was pretty good. I mean, he's stuck around for a long time, too.
Yeah.
That's an interesting player right there. I really think that he could crack the top 50 or he could have to wait a little because he's really a one-year guy. So That's one that I think will be better than people realize in some respects, and I can't wait to see where he lands.
When he gets picked, my expression, that's Eric Edholm's guy.
I will attach
you to him for the draft and forever, how many years we go forward. I hope you've hit it on the head because that's always one of the fun things of the draft, one of the fun things when we get you on, Eric. Thank you much for doing so. Know it's a busy time of year. Thanks for carving out some for us.
All right, appreciate it, man. Great hearing your voice again. Talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Eric Edholm, NFL draft expert for yahoosports.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to LinkedIn.com/results to claim your credit. That's LinkedIn.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.